Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rotolo, also known as Miss ADD. And I want to welcome everyone to the program who's listening today. I think this is going to be an incredibly exciting show that we have planned today. But before I put Sean, I get Sean on, and he's going to talk about his life, which I think we're all going to find very interesting. I just wanted to remind everyone that my book is ready for purchase. So if anybody wants to buy The Gift of ADD, ADD Land, which, of course, I talk about in the book as being Hollywood, because there wouldn't be a Hollywood without ADD, you can go to my website, missadd.com, and you can purchase it. If any of you want it signed, it's going to come to me first. So if you give me a note, let me know that. I'll sign it and send it off to you. Also, one more thing. I want to remind everybody about the adult support group on Wednesday nights. It's in Torrance, California, the Center for Learning Unlimited, 2785 Pacific Coast Highway. We have a wonderful group, of which Sean is part of that group, and I'm sure he'll tell you how great it's been for him. Got a lot of growth going on, so thanks, and I hope whoever's in the Southern California area would love to see you there on Wednesday night. So, Sean, welcome to our program.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. I'm glad you're here. So, you know, the first thing I wanted to ask you is to tell us a little bit about your life. When you were young, of course, you weren't diagnosed with ADD till how old?
I wasn't actually officially diagnosed till I was 43.
Okay. So what was your life like growing up? And
difficult. Grade school was a constant challenge with being told that I had what they called at the time reading problems.
Okay.
And he has learning disabilities and reading problems was the only words they had for it. It was before they had the whole
Diagnosis,
alphabets for right. All of it. So I was just, you know, he can't read so good, and he has learning problems. He is hyperactive, and he doesn't pay attention.
Okay.
He doesn't apply himself.
Okay.
Heard that all through
so
grade
I.
school. Yeah,
yeah,
we all did.
Right.
High school, again, was a struggle.
Right.
But the part that really got me through was we had a fairly good performing arts department.
Oh, great.
So there was, you know, the drama club, and, you know, after
school.
Were
you in the plays?
All of them. All. Yes. Yes, I was.
Was this here in Southern California?
No, this was in Northern California. This was Pinewood High School in Los Altos, California.
Oh, great. Okay.
Back in the 80-somethings.
Okay.
But, yeah, so that was we also had a speech and debate team. That was really beneficial. So my freshman year, stood up in front of the speech and debate coach and just introduced myself as, "Hi, I'm Sean Conklin." And she goes, "Okay, you're going into humorous and terp." That was, you know, she spotted it. She nailed it right away.
Wow.
Got me
wow.
in on the humorous interpretation part of the speech and debate team. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, she was fantastic. Kathy Ann's good, if
so
you're listening.
One of the things I tell parents of kids that come to me is that yeah. for me with my own boys, getting that creative connection
mm-hmm.
to school, they were, you know, news producers and news directors on Live from 205, which was a live news program up in Palos Verdes. It really helped them do better in school. Did you find that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I found it provided a creative release that I didn't get in the other classes.
Right.
There was no creativity in, say, math
okay, right.
or science.
Right.
I mean, it
yeah.
was just you either got it or you didn't.
Right.
History and English. English was a little easier because I there was something to get. You had to interpret, like we were in, like, English literature class
right.
when we were studying Shakespeare.
Right.
I would get the saucy references.
Right.
So I would be sitting there making the references back to the teacher. So that part was all right. History was just memorizing.
Okay.
Which ADD we can do. You give us something, we can memorize it. It's like, okay, we might not remember it 3 weeks later, but we can memorize
right.
it
if
for
we,
the time.
It depends on the level of disability.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause there are some kids who have severe working memory issues.
Okay.
So with those kids, when I work with them, it's more about understanding the story than trying to memorize because they can't retrieve it.
With my reading abilities, I had to memorize.
Okay.
So for me, reading was a matter of memorizing sentences, memorizing words, because like phonics and sounding things out,
right.
That was figuring things out. As far as I was concerned, that was as close to math as you could get.
Okay. So that was pretty boring.
So, yeah. But okay. If I could just sit down, slug through and read it, memorize it.
Right.
That way, you know, if it was the same words that I memorized on the test, hey, I was golden.
Right. Yeah. So, and some people, you're right, there are some people with ADD that are very good at that because mm-hmm. it's rote
yes.
kind of stuff. Others can't. But I saw something interesting this morning to digress for a minute.
Absolutely.
But along the same lines, there was a TED Talk that I watched by a young kid who was in Carnegie Mellon, and he's going to be a director. And he was talking about his life having ADD. One of the things that I picked up that he said is many times people will talk about ADD as a focus problem. And he said, no, it's not a focus problem. Because when I like something, I can focus all day long.
Yes.
It's a problem for somebody when you don't like something.
Right.
And this is what happens as you have two boys and I have two boys in the whole school situation where if they don't like it, they're not going to do well.
There was I don't know if it was a public service announcement or there was a commercial on a couple years ago, and they were trying to describe what ADD was like. And it was a lady sitting at a boardroom, and they said, what if someone was constantly changing the channel you were watching?
Right.
And I'm like, well, it's not like that.
Right.
Because I could very easily watch one channel all day long. That's not the problem. The problem is I'm interested in watching every other channel also.
Exactly.
It's not a matter of watching one television. It's more along the lines of watching 9 televisions all at once and following along.
Right.
So that, in my mind, that would be closer to what ADD is.
Yes.
As opposed to the constant flipping of channels. It's like, no, I can watch one thing.
Right.
The problem is I would rather watch 9 things at once.
Which is when we literally fall apart.
Which is when, yeah, because you
it's
can't do 9 things at once. No, that's the problem. I only have 2 hands, 2 feet, 2 ears, and 2 eyes.
Right, exactly.
So I'm still outnumbered. But
you would rather do that.
But that's what I would rather do,
right.
Absolutely.
And that's all part of the creative mindset. And that's where we really get into, now we're going to talk about what you did after college, what led you to clown school.
What led me to clown school.
Yes.
Growing up in the area I lived in, it was my high school was literally right in the middle of the booming Silicon Valley.
Wow.
I mean, just down the road, Apple Computer was blowing up. IBM was coming out. Personal computers were coming out. It was 1984. I mean, the Silicon Valley was exploding. Everybody around me was going into computers or business.
Right.
The movie at the time was Risky Business.
Okay.
Everybody I knew and most of the kids I went to high school were either going into computers or going into business.
Okay.
For the longest time, I just said, I'm going into business because it was a line from a movie. So I went to my guidance counselor, and when it came down to it, he says, what do you want to do? And I said, I really want to go to performing arts. I mean, I really would like to be in a performing arts school.
Right.
And he said, okay, well, let's get you into a good business program anyway. And this was, at the time.
He was really listening to you.
Oh, yeah, he heard every word I said. This was my college guidance counselor, my freshman year in college. He says, okay, and up until this time, the classes that I was going to in college, in my first year of college, I was going to my communications classes. I was going to my drama classes. I was going to my creative writing classes. I wasn't going to my math classes. I wasn't going to my
English.
I wasn't going to my economics one. All of those classes.
Where did you start college?
I went to Kenyatta College.
Where
in
is that?
Redwood City, California.
Okay.
It's a community college up on the hill.
Okay.
But I did the drama department, I did the communications department, and those I was showing up and flourishing in. basic math 101 in English I wasn't doing well in, California history, I'm like, what do you mean I forgot to go again? Of course I forgot to go again. I don't like the class. I don't like the teacher.
Right.
My math class, I remember I walked into the class. I sat down, and the teacher put this big equation on the board, and he said, if you have a problem figuring out this equation, you do not belong in this class. So I got up and I left. That was the easiest class of all.
That.
So, I mean, and then, you know, back to this guidance counselor, he says, yeah, we need to get you a good business school. We need to get you in a computer science program. We need to get you this way, this way, and this way. What do you think about that? And I said, well, that's not what I asked for, but okay, thank you. So I left his office and I went to the library and researched, you know, performing arts schools, got a list of performing arts schools. And there were some of them that looked really interesting. And the one of them on the list was, you know, Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Clown College. And I went, okay, that sounds really interesting.
Wow.
Before the internet, went to the, you know, microfilm at the library and
right.
looked it up and found this Life magazine picture of Clown College, found out that it was in Venice, Florida at the time, asked the librarian if I could borrow her phone real quick. I just need to make a quick call.
You call?
Called from the library. You know, I'm sorry, those Miss Librarian, but yeah, I was the one that made the long distance call. Borrowed her phone, called information in Venice, Florida, and asked if I could be connected directly to Clown College. And the lady operator was nice enough, connected me right to Clown College. I talked to the secretary and said, "Can you send me an application?" And she sent me an application.
Wow! So. Wow!
And that was the start of the whole thing, and that was...
So how long was that program?
Clown College, when I went through it, was 10 weeks.
Okay. What did you learn there?
It changed my life.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, up until this, I mean, when I was going to regular school, it was still a struggle.
Right.
Because when I got to Clown College, it made sense. Life just made sense from that moment on. I went, okay, I can do this. This is something I excel at. This is something I feel comfortable doing.
So what kind of things were they teaching you, like juggling?
We started at 8 o'clock in the morning with morning workouts and warm-ups. It was like a 40-minute warm-up exercise, and then we had mime class. We had improv class,
wow.
character development class, and then there was juggling and skill classes that involve juggling, unicycle riding, stilt walking,
wow.
Circus arts. We had circus history class where we learned about circus history. We had, you know, character walk class where we spent the day learning how to walk and how to walk funny.
Wow. Like a clown.
Like a clown, yes.
That's very
we had makeup development class, costume development class, character development class. So, I mean, there was...
How many people were in the school?
My year, I think there were around 50 students.
So it was small classes.
Small classes, yeah.
Okay.
It's not a big university like, you know,
right.
a college campus. It happened actually in the winter quarters of Ringling Brothers Circus.
Oh.
So it was in the arena. So
you actually got to see the circus going on while you were doing...
The circus was actually out on the road
right.
while the Clown College was going on.
You.
So
okay.
the Clown College was happening 3 months before, and then when the circus pulled in, the clowns that actually graduated and were offered contracts would then go right into the circus.
So did you graduate and was offered a contract?
I was graduated, I was offered a contract, and spent 5 years touring with Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey Blue Unit.
Oh, my God. Talk about that. What was that like?
Amazing.
Really?
Yeah. It was my very first day on the circus. I locked the door to my little room and sat in there with a classmate that had gotten a contract as well, and we both sat there and we go, what have we done? What have we done? Oh, my God, this is such a mistake. What the heck are we doing here? This is nothing that we were promised. Oh, my God, we're going to die. We're going to die. The thing is, at Clown College, it was such a celebration of who you were and how you learned to be a clown, and everybody loved you, and people said you did a great job, and
wow.
that was wonderful. And then when you get to the circus, it was, hi, welcome to the circus, now it's time to work.
Whoa.
So, I mean, all of the glitter had disappeared, and it was like, no, this is a job now, get to work. Whoop-pah! And, ah! So
what did you have to do?
I, I don't know. That was the thing. I didn't know what to do. My first day working for the Ringling Brothers Environmental and Greatest Show on Earth, I had no idea what I was supposed to do because I got there and I met the boss clown and he went, all right, we got a lot of work to do. Everyone's got their list. Get to work. And literally everybody disappeared. Suddenly, at one moment there was hundreds of people all standing around. The next second, everyone was gone. And it was just that they were moving at a completely faster pace than I was. Literally, all I had to do was just start moving faster. And the faster I moved, people just started going, you, come here, do this. You, come here, do this.
Oh,
you, come here, do this.
Oh.
So once I just started getting up to speed, suddenly I started seeing people and doing things, and it made sense. And I'm like, okay, I just have to move faster.
So they didn't, like, give you a list of things you had to do?
Nope. I was just supposed
to. So what kind of things did you have to do?
I had to, you know, paint props.
Okay.
I had to get costume fitted for the show. I had to unload prop boxes and load them back up. I had to make sure that my props from Clown College that I was going to be performing on the show looked right. Had to be able to work right. Were they road ready?
Okay.
Did they, you know, the props from Clown College were very, very pretty, but were they functional? Could I get into them in 30 seconds by myself?
Okay.
So these are the kinds of things that I didn't think about, but eventually
just came about.
It came about, and, oh, okay, now I get it. So it was what I learned at Clown College was wonderful for being a clown and learning this character and this craft. When I actually got the job, it was like, okay, now I have to work.
So were there different types of clowns?
Yeah, there are different types of clowns, and it's basically based on whatever character's inside of you and whatever.
So how do you discover that?
A 10-week pressure cooker in Florida.
So what kind of...
Basically, that's what Clown College. It's this 10-week pressure cooker where they throw you in there, and it's like it's combination pressure cooker, meat grinder, and, you know, carnival ride.
Wow.
Where they sweat it out of you. They, you know, they give you all of this support, and at the end, this clown kind of pops out.
So,
and if you don't have it, you can't create
it.
Right. You really can't. There are people there who go, you know, I'm funny, I'm interesting, I'm talented, but they're not clowns.
Right.
And it's this very specific little germ that you either have or you don't.
And what is that?
I don't know. I know I have it, and I mean, if I could go back on it, I would go, you know what, it's about 9% creativity, 97% ADD, and 2%, you know, magic from another world.
Right. What kind of clown, who were you?
I would call it an Auguste clown, which is the one with the very colorful face, big eyes, big mouth, big nose, big hair, big shoes, big feet.
Right.
So, and then there are white face clowns, and then there are character clowns. And
so were you a sad clown? Were you
no.
a happy clown?
I was happy, mischievous.
Okay.
One day at Clown College, it was in mime class, which was probably the hardest class at Clown College for me.
I can imagine.
Because it was very focused.
Right.
The gift. And it was also very controlled. Where the other stuff, I mean, they were trying to get us to be big, and but mime was very controlled and very refined. I developed a great appreciation for mime.
Right.
And I find mime more beneficial than just, say, meditation.
Wow.
Because and there's, you know, you could practice mime, and I would say it has the same benefits as Tai Chi, martial arts, meditation. Mime is, I would put it right up there.
Does it take you to another dimension?
It takes you to another, well, you are representing gravity that isn't there.
Okay.
For example, when you hold something in your hand, you are creating the reality of holding something in your hand. For example, if you were to pick up a ball, if you were to actually pick up a ball, you would actually feel the weight of the ball, and your hand would hold the actual shape of the ball. Now, if you were to mime that, you would actually have to mime the same creativity.
Picking it
up. So the weight, you would have to demonstrate the weight. You would have to show in your hands the shape of the ball, and doing that, you're actually focusing on something that isn't there.
Wow.
So you're actually creating actuality from nothing.
Wow.
So in a sense, it's using lots of parts of your brain and the physicality of it all at once. So yeah, the mime is...
Did you ever do it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. I enjoy doing it.
Wow.
And did it. But back to the story, this teacher said, I need you to... She had a bowl full of emotions and character traits. We had to pick it out and demonstrate it. And I got brat. And I looked at her and going, I can't do that. And she looked at me and she says, you're probably the only one here today that can. And that, I think, was the defining moment in I went from being just good at Clown College. I think that was the day that I got.
Wow.
I understood character. I understood all of the elements.
Just from her saying that?
Yeah, she just said, yeah, you can. You're probably the only one that can.
Wow.
I think I put that in the bowl just for you anyway. And I went, and it took me a while. And I go, brat. And not that I was a brat.
Right.
But I got it.
Wow.
And I kind of, at that moment, I let go of what I thought I was doing. I went, okay, I'll try it your way. You know, why not? I will use this as a learning moment.
Wow.
And I did, and it opened up, and everything flowed from there.
So the creative side, you would say, came out 10 times?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because one of the things, you know, we talk about in group is how fear can stop the creative mindset.
Yes.
And so you released your fear that day.
Yeah.
And just did.
She saw something that I either knew was there and didn't acknowledge, or
didn't see
or was unaware of.
Okay.
You know, figure that out. So personal trait we're unaware of. Huh?
Yeah, I've had a lot of them.
Yeah.
So the kids that, let me just go back to school for a minute. The kids that were at this clown school with you, as you look back, and I know you just came off of a reunion.
Yes.
Was everybody ADD?
No, but a big chunk of us, I would say, yes.
Okay.
There were some that it was so obvious, you know, looking back on it now.
Right.
With the ability to take the ADD goggles on and off.
Right.
And look at the world that way. I would say, yeah, there was a handful of us that were so entirely ADD that it was, you know, without having it tattooed on our forehead, that would be it. I mean, the way we just existed. I mean, there was, you know, having conversations. And one of the things that there was a circus conversation that I had with somebody where we'd be sitting there talking, and in the middle of the conversation, the person would ears perk up and he'd walk away. Just boom. One of the reasons is because he heard his cue music.
Oh,
the
wow.
Show. So you'd be sitting there having this, you know, conversation with somebody, and all of a sudden they'd get up and leave. Well, I knew why he got up and leave, because that was his cue. He had to go. And that would happen. It would happen at Clown College. It would happen on the circus. You'd be sitting there talking to someone, and they just disappear. Well, about, you know, after they did their act or halfway through the show, they'd come right back, stand next to you, and pick up from the exact syllable they left off on. And
that's the best.
I would be able to follow along no problem. And they would, you know... That I think that was one of the key markers of you know, just the obvious, yes, ADD exists in that community.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't do that anywhere else.
No,
I've never
can't.
Had that conversation with anybody except with other people who, you know, other members of the ADD community. That could happen. Yeah, I could be talking to people like in the group Justine that I go to on Wednesday nights. I have had conversations with people and literally – the person I was talking to looked at his watch, said goodbye, got in his car, and drove away. 2 weeks later, that person was back in the group and walks up to me and just starts the same conversation I've had. And it just didn't miss a beat. Didn't miss a beat. It's like, yep, these are my people.
That's the best. Oh, my God. You got my producer in the back hysterical, too. Because it's so true, because we live this life every day.
We live it.
And there's so much fun in this life.
It can be fun. It can be fun.
I know
fun.
That there's other pieces of it. But
there are other pieces of it that are just, oh, you know, people that don't who aren't in it, who
right.
you know, are tethered to those of us who do live it.
Right. They don't get it.
They don't, and they try to, and but
right.
that's the part about ADD that's difficult.
Right.
It's, you know, us living with them.
Right. Exactly.
And them aren't bad.
Right.
It's just they're not us.
Right. And they don't understand. They tend to at times get confused with the behaviors
mm-hmm.
versus who we are.
Right.
Because we're really, for the most part, really good people.
Oh, yeah.
Who just have these behaviors sometimes that other people don't get.
And there are ways of controlling them.
Right.
There are ways of managing them.
Right, which we're learning in group.
Which we're learning, but
right.
there's no way to get rid of them.
No, absolutely not. They're always, I mean, I think I'm pretty well in control of them.
Right.
But trust me, they come out and
mm-hmm.
I laugh because I think
and there are some times where you think, you know, I am in such control of this. I've got this nailed down, and then all of a sudden you turn around and look at the wake of disaster behind you going, wow, today was a complete ADD day.
Exactly.
So.
But if you can laugh about it,
yes.
that's the whole thing. And I know when you have kids, it can be difficult because we really want to role model to
mm-hmm.
them. But, you know, your boys probably most likely have ADD.
They have the gift. Yes, they
yes,
do.
Yes, they do.
Yes, they
so,
do.
So, I mean, they're going to learn a lot from you having the gift.
And my job, or, you know, what I strive to do so hard is one, be understanding. It's like, you know what, and to explain that I really do understand what
right.
you're doing. When I ask you, what are you doing, and your immediate reaction is, oh, no, Dad, I do know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Not only have I been there, but I'm
done
there
that.
With you. I'm watching you do it, and I know exactly what you're going to do next. Because
right.
I can see it just from, I was there.
Been there, done that, bought the T-shirt. That's
I know, you know,
yeah.
I can see you walking down the driveway with a hammer in your hand, and I know.
What are they going to do?
What are you going to do? Well, yeah, you're going to take the hammer and you're going to hit something till it falls apart. I know that. Why are you doing that? I don't know. I know why you're doing it, because it feels good to hit something with a hammer. Any thought beyond that, there is no thought beyond that. It's just, I just want to hit something with a hammer.
Exactly.
You know, whether it's something that belongs to you, child, or me, Dad, that's,
you know,
a dark gray area.
I know we're digressing here, but I have to say something.
Yes.
You know, when my kids with ADD, especially boys,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, they like to play with fire. They find it very fascinating.
Yes,
okay.
we do.
So my elder son, when he was 10, I realized he had stolen matches out of the kitchen and was
mm-hmm.
lighting rubber bands in the house.
Good, clean fire.
And, right, exactly. And so I said to him, look, here's what we're going to do. And I had a lot of parents who, like, chastised me for
mm-hmm.
this. Let's go get a pan. We got one of those cookie sheets.
Yeah.
And let's get some plastic soldiers. Let's go to the dollar store and buy some plastic little soldiers.
Yes.
And I will sit outside while you light these guys on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I mean, there were other parents who thought I was completely out of my mind.
Right.
But the bottom line is the kid never played with fire again.
Nope.
Because I let him do it.
Yes. A wonderful teaching moment.
Absolutely it was. Come on. And you know what? He talks about it to this day.
Absolutely.
Mom, what a great idea. Then I never had to feel. And there was a couple of times after that where he'd say, can we go do that? And as long as I was with him, he'd say, let's go burn the soldiers.
There you go.
So, I mean, but seriously, that's exactly what you were talking about.
Yes.
He needed to do that.
Yeah.
Other people would say, why? Because he liked to see them go on fire, or fire was exciting. Your son with the hammer liked
right.
to break something.
It wasn't necessarily that he liked to break something. It's that
it's, yeah.
physical need
right.
to hit something with a hammer.
Right.
Why? You can't. That's just what he needed to hit something with a hammer at that moment.
Did you let him?
Well, he had to finish. Yeah.
Good. Okay. But, I mean.
And then at the end I said, okay, are you done now? Yeah. Okay, clean it up.
Okay, see? You understood that.
I understood that.
See, that's where I think we're head and shoulders above the parents who have kids with ADD, and they don't either admit that they have ADD or they don't
well,
have it, you know? Yeah.
It's hard to ADD is one of those ones where you kind of go, ooh, I don't know. I don't want my son labeled with ADD. But
now it's a gift. That's why I published the book, because I really believe that if parents can get excited about this, look, are there negative symptoms? You and I know there are.
Yes.
But for the most part, if you stay positive with your kids about having ADD, one of the reasons I did this book is a couple of years ago I was working with a couple of teenage boys who started to get depressed over the fact that they had ADD. And I said, guys, do you realize that if it wasn't for ADD, there wouldn't be a Hollywood? And they both looked at me. What? I said, everybody over there has ADD. Are you kidding me? And that's what made me realize, wow, I need to help not only these kids, I need to help the parents.
Yeah.
It's not a death sentence.
No, it's not. And there are, you know, I call it the gift curse, because it is both. And I mean, even in my own ability to get things done on a daily basis, there are things that, you know, ADD makes it manageable.
Right.
If I have to get through, you know, a tedious task,
right,
there are ways of making it fun and making it a game and, you know,
exactly,
making it creative and doing
exactly
it. But at the same time, the curse of it is I have to be careful that I don't spend 8 hours writing the rules of the game and coming up with subplots and forget all about, ooh, you know, all I was supposed to do was sleep. So in that sense, yeah.
It's so true. It's incredible how our minds work, and most of us have the same kind of function in our minds. So
yes.
Okay, let's get back to the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, where we were starting off.
The circus.
So, okay. You know, I remember growing up in New York and going to the circus at Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
And it was the highlight of my year, because normally my parents, my mother, would take me and my brother down there for, you know, and it was such a big deal to see the clowns and the elephants and the tigers and the lions and all that. And thinking about all the work that went into that show, even as a little girl, I used to think, wow, this must really take a lot of work, the flying trapeze, the...
A lot of work, a lot of people, a lot of...
So are the leaders of the Ringling Brothers, are they, do they have ADD? I mean, are there people there that are linear that can get...
Oh, yeah. There are definitely very linear, I mean, I don't want to use the word regular. That's not right, because
right,
they're still circus folk.
Yes.
But they are not so gifted as us.
Exactly.
I'll use those words to be so politically correct. No, there are, you know, stage managers and people that actually set up and do the work that are just... They're there to do the work. They're not the, you know, even some of the directors of the circus are just very, okay, this goes here, that goes there, do this, do
they're
this.
They're very linear.
Very linear. You get to more along lines of, like, say, Clown Alley. We were, you know, I would say we were the biggest ADD group around. But in the circus world, it worked, because we could go, you know, we would do 500 shows a year. So you're doing the exact same routine 500 times.
Wow.
The only thing that was changing was the audience. So every time you did it, you had the chance of doing the exact same thing for a completely different audience.
Right. Okay.
But, you know, can I ever do the exact same thing every single time? No.
No.
Part of the gift.
Right.
But that was the enjoyable part, is that doing it every single 500 times, it was still new. Number 498.
Right.
I mean, doing, I, you know, I would still find a new way to, you know, fall down.
Okay.
Every single time. I would still, but the other thing was, is if I was in a large gag with other clowns, you know, I had to make sure that I hit my mark at the right time, every time.
Did you practice? Did you have rehearsal?
Yeah, we rehearsed. We rehearsed for like two months before the show would go out on the road.
Let me ask you this. Did everybody, because, you know, you've got a group of people here where most of them have ADD, and you know there are co-occurring disorders with ADD.
Yes.
One such being bipolar.
Okay.
Okay. Or oppositional defiant disorder.
Sure.
Okay. How did everybody get along? Was there a lot of competition?
Like any family.
Okay, so there was fighting.
It was a family in every sense of the word.
Okay.
You had your brothers. You had your sisters.
Okay.
You had your crazy cousins, your kooky uncles.
Did you have alcoholics? And
yeah, there were some.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did they hide it or?
Some did a very good job of hiding it. Some did a horrible job of hiding it. Some didn't even try to hide it at all.
Okay, so they kind of got.
You know, there were some that you'd kind of go, hey, you got to get up. You got to go to work right now. No, you got to go to work. All right, tie them to the float if you have to. And there were times where there would be a circus performer who was just, you know, literally strapped to the float, and as the float went down the track and over the bumps, he'd be kind of ragdolling it down there, and every so often he'd kind of look up and kind of remember where he was, and he'd halfway, or, yeah, so. You know, there are some who definitely had ADD. There are some that didn't have it, and then there are some who, you know, fall within the range. But, yeah, for the most part, I would say that ADD was prevalent.
So here's a good question that I'm sure a lot of people listening probably think about, too. So I've heard, because I'm not in the entertainment world, okay, I have heard that many times people who are comedians are really kind of antisocial kind of people, not sociopathic.
Okay.
Just they don't really like to interact with people very much. Okay. Larry David happens to be one of those people that I've heard that from. So the clowns, the people that you knew, were a lot of them hiding pain? Were emotional pain?
I would say that, I mean, for me, I brought my own emotional pain with me when I left and ran away and joined the circus. I had, you know, my own pain that I brought with me.
Right.
And I know that, you know, when my mom passed away, I think that opened the door for me to go, okay, this is either, you know, my mom isn't telling me that I should go this and I should do this. So here's the door. The door's open now.
Had she died before you left?
She died before I left, yeah.
Okay.
She was always, and she, you know, encouraged me to go, you know, you will go to college. You know, you should do this. And at the time it was like, okay, am I going to college now just because I don't want to piss off my mom, or is it something I really want to do?
Right.
Well, my mom's not here anymore, and if she's not here, I can't really piss her off.
Right.
So.
Where was your father at the time?
My dad was alive. My dad still is alive. And, you know, when I told my dad I want to run away and join the circus, he went, okay, great, I'll help you pack. So it made sense to him. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he keyed in right away. And
he meant that in a positive
way. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Very supportive.
Okay.
I mean, when I first mentioned it, when I mentioned I wanted to go to clown college to my sister, she went, oh, really? What are you going to do with that? How's that going to work? She's since come around nicely.
Okay.
But my dad was like, yeah. Here we go.
That's great.
What do you need? How can I help?
So you didn't see a lot of, you wouldn't say you noticed maybe as you were traveling around with these guys that they were putting makeup on and hiding their pain.
No, not like that.
Okay.
Because you get that a lot. You know, aren't you guys just, you know, painted smiles on and crying on the inside?
Right.
No, you couldn't. You could not maintain the level of performance energy we had if that was the case. And the ones that were really like that, one of the nice things about Clown College is it weeds it out.
Okay.
Because it was so, if you didn't have the mustard, you wouldn't make it. And there are some that made it onto the road that, like, but once they got on the road, that was the genuine crucible, and we just, you know, they either shined or got crushed.
So you were with Ringling Brothers for how long?
5 years.
Okay.
Out on the road.
And you really loved it?
Yeah, I did.
What made you come off the road?
I had a 5-year plan, and I like to say that.
Okay.
But I after I did it, it was one of those things where I went, you know, I'm going to do this for as long as I love doing it.
Right.
And I love doing it, and I loved doing the whole thing. There was one day, though, we were in some town, and I was really sure that I hadn't been to this town before. And we went shopping to the mall, and I was walking around the mall, and I looked up, and I knew the layout of the mall.
He said,
not only do I say I knew the layout, I mean, I had been to this mall multiple times before in my life, and I'm like going, okay, I'm done.
Right.
If this is looking familiar to me, it is time to move on. That, and I was ready. I was comfortable.
How old were you at that point?
26.
Okay.
27.
Okay.
Around there.
So what did you decide to do?
I was in a new relationship.
Okay.
So I was in a long distance relationship.
How did that happen while you were on the road?
Very well, thank you.
I mean, did you meet her on the road?
I met her on the road, yes. Yes, I did. And I met her my first year on the road.
Okay.
And lost contact with her for 3 years, but managed to stay in contact with members of her family as I traveled around the country. I would occasionally run into her brothers and sisters.
Oh, okay.
And then my last year on the road, I reestablished contact with her, and then we established a long-distance relationship with me being on the road and her being, and then once I got off the road, we got together.
This is your wife.
This is my wife. Yes,
okay.
It is. Hi,
okay.
Dear.
That's great. How many years have you been married?
Oh, don't ask me that question because I'm going to get it wrong.
Oh, my God.
18.
Okay.
I'm going with 18. It could be closer to 16 or 17, but I'm going to go with 18.
Okay.
We got married in – see, now you're asking me math. We got married – August 26, 1996.
Oh, wow.
See?
Okay.
Got the date right and everything.
So it is 18 years.
There you go, baby.
Yeah, I
right on the money.
I have a math learning disability,
there you
so
go.
It really doesn't matter.
I get it wrong regularly.
So tell me,
it is
she
important
does
to me.
Not have ADD.
She does not.
Okay. And what was your attraction to her?
She's beautiful.
Right. Besides that, what's inside?
If I had to put my finger on just one thing, it was she got the jokes.
Okay.
When we first started going out.
Okay.
And it was that I was, you know, it just worked between us.
You clicked.
We clicked.
Okay.
We clicked.
But let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you were this fun-loving clown.
Yes.
Funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
ADD.
Mm-hmm.
All over the place. Because I hear this a lot. I hear this that, you know, the person without ADD falls in love with this person, and then they get together and the stuff starts to happen.
Yeah. When I was on the road clowning, working with the circus, I was at the top of my game,
mm-hmm.
even with ADD, because I was in a world where it worked.
You were in that bubble.
I was in my ADD bubble world.
Right.
Because I had, you know, I lived and worked where I lived and worked.
Right.
And with ADD, that's a perfect storm of just making things work.
Right.
Without using the word work too many times, it did. It worked.
Right.
I'd get up in the morning. I'd go to work. I'd spend time doing what I love doing. I would come home, go to sleep, you know, on a train that was owned by who I worked for. And it was this completely enclosed circle, and everything worked. So, you know, going out and socializing, hey, we're with the circus. You know, we're only going to be in town for 2 weeks.
I had
lines. I was attractive. I was at the top of my game. So,
right.
Yeah, I get off the circus and immediately, okay, I'm going to go and I'm going into the entertainment business, because that's what clowns do. Once you get off the circus, you go right into commercials. You do a couple commercials. You do a couple TV shows. You do a couple movies. You make a couple $1 million. You open a costume store and you live the rest of your days. And that was the plan. Boom,
Is
boom,
that
boom.
What happened?
Not even close. That would be no.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that wasn't the plan.
Right.
But that's not what happened.
So what happened?
Well, I got off the road and, you know, I went, okay, and I went and got myself an agent and started going out on commercial auditions and started going out and doing kids' birthday parties and started my own entertainment business where I'd book myself out to do parties and do balloon animals and, you know, corporate events and just anyone that would, you know, we're looking for someone fun and entertaining.
There I am.
There I am. Hired myself out for all these things. And then still going out and doing auditions and
Anything ever happen?
No, not for the longest time.
Okay.
It took many years.
Okay. Were you married already?
Well, then we got, that was the first year, and then we got married.
Okay.
And, things were still, I was working hard and still functioning very well within the AD, because I, going to auditions and working at the toy store and doing this, and everything was still
clicking.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what?
I'd say kids,
right,
were the big removed from the bubble, the bursting of the bubble. Not to say kids are wonderful, because
no,
they are
wonderful.
But as far as the ADD bubble, that was, I believe that, looking back on it now, that was the part that went poof.
Right.
Things changed, because it wasn't, dinner, you had to have dinner ready at a certain time. The kids have to go to school at this time.
Right.
This has to happen here. So the ability to just freewheel it, there became more rules, more refinement, more people started depending on my time.
Right.
Which is another thing, if you live in that 80, if I don't get to it, well, I get to it tomorrow. You can get to job and you can get to work on time every day. That's no problem. But if I forget to have dinner at 8 o'clock, no big deal. I'll eat at 10.
Right.
If
with kids.
You can't do that with kids. You can't
do
that with a family. So
when was it then, do you think, that you started to, or your wife started to say, something's not right here?
When the kids started going to school, and I was pretty much off the rails. I wasn't functioning well. I mean, I wasn't getting things done. I wasn't.
Were you depressed?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that was the first thing. That was the first thing they said. Like, well, no, he might have ADD, but he's definitely depressed.
Okay.
That was the doctor's recommendation at the first meeting. It's like, no, he's. Well, let's take care of the depression first. If we can take care of the depression, maybe the ADD will work itself out.
So did they take care of the depression?
They try to. Yeah, I mean, there was a litany of this, that, and the other thing that just made me feel bad or worse. And I finally went, okay, you know what? If I keep hearing the word ADD by these professionals, maybe we should address it from that direction. So that's when we went, okay, let's look at it from, is this ADD? Yes. Okay, now we have a foothold. Now we have a place to start. Now how can we work with ADD? And then once we started working with ADD, the depression lessened and things started making more sense. And so now we're working as, okay, we're an ADD family, and I have ADD, and the two boys have ADD. And so now we're trying to make it work that way.
How did things go with your wife? I mean, was there a time when you had some serious issues?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And how did you work through those? What happened?
You just knuckle down and work through it. You are right. There's a lot of, you're right, I'm disorganized.
Right.
Let me write that down. Let's work with that. Let's talk about it.
To separate out the behaviors from you?
We're working on that.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good.
And that's really important. Even for me, it's like, okay, I completely get that I can be frustrating.
Right.
I will work very hard to be less frustrating. However, you're still going to come home and find this, that, or the other thing.
Right. It can't be perfect.
There's
no such thing.
I know that upsets you, and I'm sorry, but don't think I'm doing this behavior just to upset you, because everything in your mind tells you he's doing this just to upset me. It's like, no, I'm just doing that because I'm not even aware that I'm doing that.
Exactly.
And it's not.
It's got nothing to do with you.
And then try saying that to someone who doesn't have ADD. This has nothing to do with you. I'm not trying to piss you off, but I'm also, this has nothing to do with you. It's not you. It's just not you.
It's all me.
It's all me.
I promise you, it's all me. It's going to be over soon.
Either
that, or I'm going to make sure it's over.
But it has nothing to do with you.
It's frustrating, because in working with couples, and most of the time that I do, one has ADD, the other one doesn't. Most of the time it's the man with the ADD. And so what I find is that it's very difficult, because they both have a side,
Yes.
And I see both sides of the whole thing. But because I
was able to work really hard and get more or less in control of my negative symptoms. Not completely, but more or less in control. And off my medication and doing okay. I have high expectations for people that I work with that have ADD. That if you do the work, you too can get to a better place.
And you can.
Yes, and absolutely. So I mean, I think it's very difficult.
Easy work, but.
No, it's not easy. And that's the whole thing. It takes time and it takes a lot of effort, you know. But laughter is a big part of life. And, you know, I know that Steve and I, we both have ADD. We laugh a lot. I mean, that's what keeps us going is the laughter. And I think it's good because we understand each other, you know. We all in this family are gifted. When we all get together, all the kids have ADD. So we're all gifted. It's great. But it's hard when that other person is kind of outside your bubble.
You look for ways to bring them in. Or you look for ways to encapsulate them.
Yeah.
So they feel like they're in.
How does she do with the two boys having ADD also and you?
She feels outnumbered.
I bet she does.
It's 3-1, lady. You're going down. It's learning, it's adjusting, it's taking deep breaths, it's saying that, you know, I might not like it, but that is who he is. And, I mean, even for me, looking, you know, when my kids do something, I just go, okay, I might not like it, it might drive me up the wall, but that's who he is.
Right.
Take a breath. And go from there.
Right.
So,
and address it in a different way than it was addressed with you.
Right. Yeah. There are times where my kid will be doing, you know, he'll just be on a tear. And he'll wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know. Well, no, let's be honest about this. He woke up at 5:30 this morning, Pacific Standard Time.
How old is he?
13.
Okay.
But, you know, time change doesn't mean anything to him. He just gets up. Like, you have an extra hour. What? Why? I'm up. You know? But, I mean, he's just going, and it's a beautiful morning, Mom and Dad. It's 5:30, son. I know. Isn't it great? We're up a whole extra hour earlier. It's a gift.
See, the breathing.
The breathing, yes.
Really helps.
Breathe.
All right, so let's talk about your book. What's
my
the
book.
Title of the book?
Right now, my working title, and don't steal it, please.
No, I won't.
I'm working on the concept of clown logic.
Okay.
And it's the idea that now that I know that I have ADD, I'm going to go back and look at my long and glorious life with the ADD goggles on and off.
Okay.
To see how ADD and the gift have affected my life decisions, what I've done, how I got to where I am, whether ADD had a glorious, triumphant arise, or if it was the curse that actually brought me down at that moment.
Okay.
And just look at the life that way and then see, this worked. Why did this work?
Right.
How did this work, and how was ADD responsible for it working or failing?
That's right.
And there are things that I have, you know, learned and done that are like going, that was a definite ADD moment, and it worked or didn't work because of this.
Okay.
And that's kind of where I'm going with it.
Have you kind of kept notes through the years?
That's part of the gift, is that I can't remember you asking me to do something an hour and a half ago, but
right.
I can remember exactly what I was wearing on August 14th, 1992.
I love that part of us. We can. You're so right.
You know,
we can.
I can't remember to take the clothes out of the washer and put them into the dryer, or I can't remember to take them out of the dryer for 2 days, but I can tell you what happened on October 14th, 1998, tell you exactly who I was talking to, what we were talking about, what shoes I was, you know, I can't remember my own anniversary, but I can remember every aspect of the day.
Of the wedding.
From 8 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock at night. I can tell you exactly what happened. So, yes, that's the gift.
Right. And we all like that.
So,
I can,
you know,
say that pretty, it's a pretty general statement. We're all pretty much like that.
I can sit and read the book in my head. Now, the problem is getting it out.
That was my problem with my other book.
Yes. So that's where I'm at right now is
the writing.
Finding the – I need to find the first seven words. Once I find that first seven words, I'm sure it will spell out.
I have
out
an idea.
Thing. Yes.
If you get a little –
Don't say once upon a time because that's not going to work.
No, absolutely not. That's bullshit.
Not a fairy tale. This is really happening.
Okay. So get a digital recorder.
Yeah.
And talk into it. It really helps. And tell you stories.
That's how I got through English class.
By talking on...
I did, yeah, I recorded.
Okay. And then you typed from there.
Yeah.
So that's what... Tell you stories.
I will.
And then this way you'll get it out.
Yes.
Because it sounds like it would be a great book.
I have had a lot of positive feedback from other members of both the clowning community, the ADD community, and the combined community. So, yeah,
I think it's great.
It's however it comes out. I'm sure there's – whether it comes out and sits on the self-help section or this, you know, the abandoned novels, either way, it's got to come out.
It's going to be great. It really is. The thing I want to tell you is, you know, I put this book together, The Gift of ADD, which – I wrote a chapter in it and the foreword and the preface, but besides that, these are pictures of people who, you know, are just really successful, wonderful people. And I think that took a year. So I'm just saying, you know, it doesn't happen like quickly. It takes a long time for those things to happen. So, okay, let's get to the juggling. Because
okay.
I know that this is something that you've got a vision for.
Yes.
That you and I talked about.
Yes.
That we want to figure out how to get out to the schools. So I wanted to...
One of the things that we've talked about before, and I have heard from other people, including, you know, doctors and therapists, is meditation is helpful and beneficial.
Yes.
It gives you a chance to stop and breathe and let whatever thoughts in your head go.
Right.
And, you know, a thought will come into your head while you're meditating, and your idea is to go acknowledge a thought and then let it go.
Right.
I've never been able to do that.
Okay.
I if there's no thought in my head, I'm fine with that. And
if something comes up, you engage in it.
I will engage in it.
Right.
Eventually, I will let it go. But the ability to just sit and meditate, I haven't got there yet.
Right.
However, I have found certain circus skills and abilities to be just as beneficial in my head. And the limited research that I have done, I'm also receiving people going, you know what, you might have something there.
Right.
And one of them is juggling.
So let me just jump in for a minute.
Sure.
One of the things that I've noticed in the meditation world,
mm-hmm.
okay? Because like yourself, when I first started, I didn't think I'd ever be able to do it. But now it's become second nature.
Right.
But what I noticed is when I lay down at night to go to sleep, and sometimes I have some thoughts that are running through my head and it can be hard to fall asleep, so I start to breathe. And what I notice is the brain can't do more than one thing at one time.
Right.
So in the breathing process, as I'm focusing on listening to my breath, the next thing I know, I'm asleep.
Right.
Because the thoughts are gone. So is that kind of the same idea of your brain's focusing on the juggling and you're empty?
Yes.
Okay. And you've done this. You've
yes.
worked with this.
Yes.
Okay.
What I found is that in just what a simple juggling pattern, once you've actually learned the skill of the juggling.
Which is it hard?
It requires a little bit of physical coordination.
Okay.
But no more than just throwing something up in the air and catching it.
Okay.
If you can, you know, take a tennis ball or a pair of socks that you roll up in a ball, throw it up in the air and catch it in the same hand you just threw it from, you have the physical ability to learn how to juggle.
Oh, that's great to know.
That is as dexterous physically aptitude that you need to be.
Okay.
If you can throw something straight up and catch it again, you know, you practice just taking your right hand, throwing a ball, you know, up a little bit beyond eye level and then right back down and catching it in the same hand.
Okay.
You do that a couple hundred times till it's like, okay. And then you switch hands and do it with the left hand.
Okay.
And then you go, okay, I can throw something straight up and it comes straight down. Then all you got to do is turn it slightly. Throw it up so it goes out of one hand and then you catch it in, so you throw it out of your right hand
and
you catch it in
your
left hand.
Okay.
And then you practice doing that. And then you practice going from your left hand to your right hand.
Okay.
Once you feel comfortable with that, you put something in each hand. So now you have something in your right hand, something in your left hand. You throw something out of your right hand, and before it gets to your left hand, you throw whatever's in your left hand to your right hand.
Okay. That probably takes...
That's the hardest part.
Right.
But once you've gotten over that step, the next step is in juggling, you only ever count to two. Now, here's the hard part. You have three objects.
Right.
But you never, because since it's a loop and basically you're throwing a figure eight pattern.
Okay.
You only ever count to two.
Okay.
Something's in your hand, something's in the air.
Okay.
So you throw one, you catch two, you throw one, you catch two. One, two, one, two, one, two. Something's in your hand, something's in the air, something's getting thrown. Once you put the pattern together...
Okay.
You're off. You're on your way.
Okay, so let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you...
We're juggling on the radio.
Right.
Work with it.
Which is really ADD of us, isn't
yes.
it? So that's why I'm going to ask you something, because this just came up in my mind. Could
Visualize
you do,
it, people.
Could you do a video, a YouTube video that we could post on my website so people could go to my website and we could leave it on YouTube as well?
Sure.
Could you do that?
I could do that. Yes,
okay.
I absolutely could.
Will you?
I will work on it, and we will talk about it, and we will make it happen. How about that?
Yeah, because I think it would be great for people to visual. We're very visual.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
But what you have found, to get back to the reason for that, is that it's very. It's got a meditative.
It has a meditative thing, and it's. It's an active meditative thing. It's an actual, it's hard to describe, but there's actually a physical, you're actually doing something physical, but at the same time, you're not, it's not like running or jumping rope or lifting weights, because you're stationary doing it.
Okay.
But at the same time, you're physically doing something.
Okay.
It works in the ADD mind because we think in multiple directions at the same time. So it makes the juggling works because you get to a point where you're not thinking one, two, three, four, you're just doing it.
Okay.
So you're present doing the juggling.
Okay.
Which, and then you can take it to the point where you have the ability to talk or think or move or run or ride a unicycle or stand on one leg. But in the beginning, when you're just juggling, when you're just going through the motions, there's this, it's the throwing and the catching and the visualizing and getting the pattern and the rhythm.
Okay.
And the breathing, and it all just kind of syncs up nicely. And it does wonderful, it creates something to focus on.
Right.
Which one of the things that we have problems with is focusing.
Right.
On something, because we will have a tendency to focus on everything
or
the one thing. So this is just another way of focusing on something that is present and happening right at that moment.
So would you say that if you had a child
mm-hmm.
who was in class and he was oppositional defiant, or she,
mm-hmm.
okay, and the teacher didn't know what to do, so we tell the child, go out in the hall and juggle for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that juggling for 5 minutes, when they came back in, it would bring them down, kind of like meditation or mindfulness does?
I would say, yeah.
Okay.
More better than go outside and calm down.
Exactly. So this is a skill set.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing that I was just thinking about. It can also help their self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And for kids that are being bullied,
mm-hmm.
picked on,
mm-hmm.
this is a skill
yes.
that kids are going, whoa,
mm-hmm.
look what Johnny can do.
It's also a skill that doesn't require a giant field.
Right.
Or a stadium or a basketball hoop or
right.
an arena. It can be done, you know, in a courtyard. It can be done in a hallway. It can be done in an empty classroom. It also provides physical and mental stimulation simultaneously.
Which is awesome.
Which, you know, it engages a part of the brain that doesn't get engaged. You know, they'll tell you, you know, you go out and you run laps.
Right.
And it releases endorphins and stuff in your brain. Juggling does that just as well without the cardio overload.
Right.
So you're not amping the kid up to, you know, a crazy, I just ran, It's more of a, it's ramping them up, but to a level of just focus, to like,
right.
okay, I'm.
I feel better.
I feel better, yes.
I feel better. I can go back in the classroom.
It's just,
and here's the other thing,
it's
too.
Like that little bit of medicine. Instead of like the big giant dose that gets you either completely ramped up or completely knocked out, it's just that little bit that kind of takes whatever edge was there and goes, oh, all right.
Right. I can take that.
I can
it
take
takes
that.
It takes the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing, too, is this is how I see it, is it doesn't really make you feel different. Okay, so let's say the teacher says, Johnny, you're misbehaving. Go run a lap outside on the track. Or
right.
So then the class is like, oh.
Right.
You know, hey, Johnny, you know what? You're having a hard time. Go juggle out in the hall.
Mm-hmm. It has that reward aspect
yes.
of it as opposed to
yes.
the punishment aspect. It also has, you know.
A positive aspect.
I'm actually doing something.
Right.
I'm actually doing something that I feel good about doing. Other people feel good about seeing me do it.
Right.
If you see a kid running, you know, one lone kid running a lap across the field, you kind of go, poor sap, he's in trouble. But if you see a kid juggling, it's like, wow, check him out.
Right, exactly. He's cool.
That,
right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, and so, you know, there's a guy that came to speak at CHAD a couple of months ago. He wrote the book Raising Lions. I think I spoke about it one night in group.
You have mentioned it,
yes. Because I really liked his message. And one of the things that he did talk about himself, because he's now in his 40s, is when he was growing up, he could not handle the negative stuff that he heard all the time.
Right.
Like, especially in school. And he said he felt like his parents were more supportive than your average parents, but still, the stuff at school where he was always singled out and he felt stupid and he felt, you know, different, and the kids heard the teachers say these horrible things. You know, this is a common thread. And in our group where we have people that are from, you know, in their 20s through their 70s,
mm-hmm.
everybody's got the same story. So what you're trying to do is change that story.
In our population, the ADD, we are really susceptible to negative
and criticism,
even slight criticism. We take it like that's enough to crumble most of the hardest, you know, ADD egos. You know, you can crush one of us just like, oh, no, there you go.
Exactly.
You're not as cool as you think you are.
Right.
So in that sense, but the thing with the juggling is it seemed like how could you not? It was like an awe-inspiring. Oh my goodness, this seems like it makes sense. Why wouldn't
this
work?
Where did this come up for you?
I heard about it somewhere, and I don't remember where. It was somebody who a friend of mine who was working on juggling, you know, said, "Oh yeah, juggling is good for ADD," and I went, oh. And it was a light. It's like, well, of course it has to be. Of course it is.
Right.
That couldn't be a bigger no-brainer to anyone who's ever done either. or, you know, who's tried one, who's picked up the other one. Well, of course, it has to be.
Right.
Because at some point, once you get past just the basics and move on into it, I have a friend of mine who rides a unicycle and juggles five items at once and does a stage show.
Wow.
And he'll be juggling, talking to an audience, riding a unicycle on a small stage.
Wow.
You know, and to him, it is just as...
Does he have ADD?
Of course he does.
Okay.
Of course he does. Because at the end of the show, he packs everything into this trunk, and he puts it into the back of his truck with absolutely everything else he owns in the back of his truck. And then he drives to his apartment that, you know, you can tell what month it is by where all of the clothes are lying on the floor. You know,
oh,
and
my God.
On this side of the room is his dining room and bank, because that is where all of the coins he's made from the juggling show he just did is all in jars, all the quarters, all the nickels, all the dimes. And, you know, he has to roll them all up himself because the bank won't take raw change. Oh, yes. But, yeah, he definitely has ADD. But on stage,
he's in that ADD bubble.
He's in the bubble. He's got 50 things happening all at once.
Right.
He's juggling. He's riding a unicycle. He's got the entire crowd in the palm of his hands. He's, you know, the most amazing, enlightened thing you've ever seen. But once he's done, it all goes into a trunk and gets in the back of the truck, and all of a sudden...
So here's a question that I'm sure... You know, if we tried to talk to some schools to say, you know, here's a positive way to look at helping these kids. So let's say little Johnny gets sent outside and says, here's your balls, Johnny. Here's your three balls. Go juggle, right? How long does that last? The effect of the juggling. What would you say?
I would say done right.
Yeah.
In a positive environment, it would last all day.
Okay.
It would last through the weekend. I mean, it would.
You mean
done right.
The effect?
The effect, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So done right.
I mean, what I'm saying, you know, when I first came up with this idea, I'm like, okay, if you could get it into a school.
Right.
And say, hey, you know, bring it in at, like PE or an adjunct to the old physical education that's already going on, and say,
right.
Hey, here's an idea. Instead of having kids run laps or kids do pull-ups, you know, for 2 weeks, teach them to juggle.
Right.
Give them that option.
Right.
And then let them have the ability to do that. You know, if they can't, you know, run around at recess, you know, they can juggle here
okay.
in the courtyard.
Okay.
The ones that there are going to be ones that go, well, okay, I'm done with that. I learned it. I'm not, you know. And that's fine. But there are going to be those ones who it clicks with.
Right.
Who go, wow, I get it. I connect with this. I feel that. That's the ones.
Right.
So you can't say, you know, okay, it's juggling week. Everybody juggle.
Right.
Because
it's not going to work.
It's not. It doesn't work for everybody.
But here's what I was just thinking, though.
But the ones, and I'm going to say, you know, the ADD kids who get it.
Right.
Are going to want to do it.
Right. And it'll
and
help them
yeah.
feel better. But here's something else that I was thinking about. Like the guy who wrote, I wish I could remember his name, Raising Lions, and I'm so bad with names. Okay. He talked about when he would work with this at-risk population, big time at risk. He had these kids that nobody else could handle. They gave them to him. These are teenage boys. And he said one of the things he would do is they would misbehave and he'd say, you need a couple of minutes time out. Well, what do you mean? I didn't do it. I'm not angry. I'm not upset. There's nothing wrong. I just want you to go take a time out.
Right.
But okay, so I gave you 2 minutes. Now, if you argue, it's going to be three. Make a long story short, he wasn't being negative. He was being very positive and upbeat. And eventually, this is so funny, it kind of made me cry, the other kids, new kids that were coming in, when he would give the new kids a time out, they'd be like, and the other kids would go, he's not mad at you. He's not upset. Just go do the timeout.
Right.
So what I was thinking was, even for the kids with attention deficit that don't really, I can take or leave the juggling, But they're behavior issues in the classroom. What if instead of getting yelled at and pointed out and said by some teachers who don't really have filters, go take your medication, or you didn't take your medication, how about you send them out in the hall with three of their ball, you know, the balls, and say, go juggle.
Right.
That's got to be a positive versus a negative.
I would think so, yes. Absolutely.
Now, the issue is selling it to the school.
Yeah, that's – and
having them understand.
I brought it to, you know, the principal, a principal at a school, and immediately it was like, oh, well, you got to set it up like a club, and you have to have people sign in. And I'm like – my initial idea was like, if I was to just show up at the school, let the principal know that I was coming with a big bag full of juggling equipment, and anyone who wanted to learn how to juggle, here you go. Show them how to do it. And if you didn't want to, you know, no problem.
Right.
Just as, you know, an afternoon sort of thing on like one afternoon a month. And this was just when I was first putting the idea together. And I go, you know, if it was something that you were interested in and something that you felt, it would work.
Right.
And I later I went, okay, maybe we'll do it as a you know, as a PE thing. So I'm still trying to figure out the best way
to
present it.
And I'm going to try to brainstorm with you and talk to some people because...
And if you have any ideas, our number is 1-800... I'm sorry.
It's actually... What's the number here? 917-889-7025.
There you go.
So if anybody who's listening has any ideas, you can call in because we still have about 15 minutes left. But
I don't know if we'll answer your call, but you can call in. Go ahead.
Well, the producer was too busy laughing before, so I don't know if he's going to answer the phone. But we'll brainstorm this because there's definitely a plus.
Yes.
You know, the disciplining in the schools is not good.
Uh-huh.
Because it's a very negative thing. And you have kids that are in school right now.
Uh-huh.
My boys are, of course, one's in college, the other one's out. So I'm not worried about that aspect for my own kids, but I am with the kids I see.
See, the other one that I had found, and then, you know, the juggling got me thinking, well, what other circus skills worked?
Right.
One of the other ones that I found was just balancing things.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you say that, and you go, what? How do you know? I have a friend of mine who he works on Circus Vargas. His name is John Weiss. He's an amazing performer. But he used to do all sorts of clowning. He was a human cannonball.
Wow.
Phenomenal guy. You know, more energy than, I mean, the man is nuclear powered. He's just constantly going. Does he have the gift? Possibly. Probably. But at the same time, I mean, the man, he's... But one of the things he does now is balancing tricks, and he can balance just about anything.
So like when the plate's on the hand on the...
He starts off with a peacock feather, hands out 100 peacock feathers to kids, you know, brings the kids out into the arena, gives them all a peacock feather, puts them in the center of the hand and says, just put your eye on the eye of the peacock feather because it has that little eye at the top. And you just look at the eye and you just kind of keep it in the middle of your hand. And since it's a feather, it doesn't move quickly. It moves kind of slow. It catches the wind, so it's easy to balance. And you get kids who fly, but there's this focus, and then all of a sudden they're focusing in one spot, and then there's this hand-eye connection. So there's the physicality and the focusing happen simultaneously.
Wow.
Now, you move on to something, say, just like a yardstick,
right,
where you put a yardstick on the end of your finger. Just look at the very top of it, focus on it, and see how long you can keep it balanced on the end of your finger. Keep it as still as you possibly can. Suddenly, you've engaged your body. You're focusing on standing still. You're focusing on the tip of the yardstick, and you're also focusing on just keeping your hand and keeping that yardstick just balanced.
Wow.
It has, and it kicks in the same brain area. Everything kind of centers, everything slows down. So just absolutely balancing something for a couple of seconds.
Wow.
Has the same effect. Now you take it up a notch. You balance like a broom. You go get your broom. You balance it on the end of your hand. You just focus on it. And your breathing comes down. You're focusing on a spot. Your hand-eye coordination comes in, your body locks in. People who have a tendency to be very
what we used to call hyperactive.
Right.
People who were just all of a sudden. Well, now that hyperactivity is channeled.
Right.
Because they're focusing on a broomstick and they're focusing on...
And they're centered.
They're centered, but that's what was gross motor skills has now come down into fine motor skills.
Right.
Which is something that, you know, all my teachers, oh, he has horrible fine motor skills. Gross motor skills he's great at because he's running all over the place.
Right.
But my handwriting was horrible because I had fine motor... You're now moving your hand in very small centimeters of motion have great effect on something that you're balancing way up here. So that... It hones in the fine motor skills. So that's another one. Even just standing on one foot.
Yeah. And what I'm thinking about is parents that are listening today whose kids are really oppositional defiant,
mm-hmm.
especially at home.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't know how to, juggle,
right.
then they might try balancing.
Yeah, try the balancing. Another one is we have a what's called a rollabola, which is a rolling balancing board. It's a round, it's a big chunk of PVC pipe with a board that rolls on it, and you stand on that and balance it. But what I've seen at our preschool, it's a plank of wood with a 2x4 in the middle of it, and it's a balance board. And literally, you just put your feet on it, and you try to balance.
Oh, okay.
And it's like a little teeter board.
Okay.
The benefits of that have also the same effect.
Okay.
Because you've now engaged your lower body.
Okay.
And in order to do it, you need to pick a fixed spot on a wall or something. And as you focus and engage, you're now engaging physical and mental. And it's fine motor skills necessary.
And it's also increasing core.
It's increasing core.
Wow.
But at the same time, it hits that
yes.
that one little sweet spot in our brain that we don't always touch on. And
right.
So, again, it's these little circus skills that I have found out. It's like, wow, these things help my ADD.
Do you do any of this with your boys?
Yes.
What do you do?
I've got the young one. He's learning to juggle.
Okay.
The older one is now interested in using the rollabola.
Okay.
And...
How old is the older one?
13.
And the younger one is?
11.
Okay.
12, 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
They both ADHD?
One, you know what, I don't remember the actual, how many H's and A's and D's.
ADD inattentive and?
One of them has the ability to hyper-focus.
Okay.
And then the other one has hyper-distractive.
Okay. So
they both have ADD, but they both have the opposite kind
right,
of
that's
ADD.
That's what my boys have.
Yeah.
One was inattentive, the other one was hyperactive.
Yes.
So do you notice the one that's learning how to juggle, you're seeing, is he hyperactive? No, he's the younger one.
He's the younger one.
The older one is hyperactive.
Yeah, he's more hyperactive.
So what are you doing with him?
He's now getting into
the balancing. Is that helping him?
Yes, because it's he can feel it because he also is very. Originally, he was diagnosed with sensory integration issues.
Yes.
So, and I believe that you know ADD and the sensory integration issues. There's still a lot of sensory integration in there. So
yes.
He's trying to. Get along with that. So we still have. So the nice thing about the balance board is actually he can physically feel it. So there's he's the same one that needs to hit something with
right.
a hammer.
Right.
Why does he need to hit something? He doesn't know, but he just needs to hit something
right.
with a hammer.
Right.
So there's also that physicality of using the balance board and feeling the body and
which is great.
Focus, and but there's also the need to focus and concentrate because
right.
when he finds something he enjoys doing, he starts giggling.
Does he giggle in school?
He giggles all the time.
Okay.
He,
well, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yes.
I like giggle, that.
Giggle box.
Yeah, I like that. I think
love
it's
that
cute.
Very much.
I mean, there's so many kids that are angry. He's not angry. He's happy.
No.
He's giggling. It speaks a lot to you and your wife and the job you're doing, your acceptance of them.
Yes.
Because we didn't feel acceptance when we were growing
no.
up. And this is why I think, you know, this idea of getting this out to the schools and would be a great idea. Because
yes.
that would really help with the negative stuff you know, coming down and the positive stuff coming up. Because it hurts me when I see how some of these kids are spoken to in the school system. You know? I love teachers. They're all wonderful. They do something I could never do.
No.
Teach 30, 40 kids. No.
And it's difficult with, you know, if you got one or two of them who are like us.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I can, you know, there's.
Right.
I can understand.
At the same time, I don't think it's necessary to embarrass children.
No.
In front of a classroom. And I think we need to stop and think before we start, you know, talking. I had a kid last week who came to me who told me that one of the teachers said, "What do you have, dyslexia?" in front of the whole classroom. Okay. So,
yeah.
You know, you don't, you have ADD, because that's pretty impulsive of you to say that. But, you know, it's not right.
No.
So I'm just looking at different ways, and that's why I'm so happy you are on the show today, to really help the kids feel good about themselves.
Yes.
Because I don't want them to go through life. I mean, I'm sure after what you went through, I know after what I went through, I was up at school in a heartbeat if I felt that my kids, anything was happening that way. But it was okay because my kids really stood up for themselves and said, "Hey, I have an IEP, so I get to do this, this, and this," because I taught them.
Yeah, we had the conversation, you know, he didn't know what ADD was, and we sat down and tried to explain to him, "Oh, okay. So that's what it is. Great." And on he went. So, you know.
So he has an explanation.
He has an explanation. He knows what it is and how it works with him. So, and then his teachers understand it. And they've known him since he was in kindergarten. So we have that going for us. And then when his little brother came into the fold, they were expecting, you know, "Oh, no, here comes another." And the other one is the complete opposite. So they went, okay.
We can do that.
We can handle this.
That's not a problem.
So we're good.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. And they know that you understand your kids and that you're going to back your kids up. Look, I think you and I come from the same school and I told my son, you know, you disrespect a teacher, you're done, because you're done.
You're done.
You're never going to win. I mean, that's the bottom line. I don't care how mean the teacher is. I don't care what the teacher said. You engage in that, you lose.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're upset, come home and tell me.
Right.
I'll deal with it. You know, I'll talk to the teacher. We'll get it done. And that's what I think a lot of parents fall short on, because they don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And that's where, when I go into school representing a kid and parents, it makes me sad, because when I think of all these parents that are out there that don't know what their rights are, they don't know that they can go into a teacher and say, "Hold the phone. You can't rip up my child's 10-paragraph essay in front of the entire class because he didn't put his name on it." You know, I mean, that kind of stuff is just really devastating to kids. So,
yes.
You know, so we have 2 minutes left. This has been a great show. I thank you.
I had fun. Thank you very much for having me.
And we had fun because I know you got my producer to laugh, and nobody else has ever done that before in the whole time we've been doing the shows.
Challenge accepted.
So this is great, and I hope you'll come back. We'll figure out together how to maybe get this started. If anybody who's listening has any ideas, please, you know, you can email me at Justine. It's Miss Justine at missadd.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just go to my website, missadd.com, and you can, in the forum section, you can write to me.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'm sure there's some people out there who might have some ideas.
That would be great.
But we're going to keep doing this.
We're going to work on this.
Figuring this out, and
we're a work in progress.
When the book's done, you got to come back and be on the show.
Yes.
And you're going to work on the YouTube video.
I'm going to work on the YouTube video.
That we're going to post on my website.
Post on the website. You can see all of this stuff.
Okay.
And we'll make it work.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank
you
very much.
Being on the show. It was a great show. We loved it. And for everybody who's listening, thank you for joining us. Next week, I'm going to have Michelle back, who's the special ed teacher. And we're going to talk about oppositional defiant behavior, not only at home, but in the classroom. So thank you for listening. Again, this is Miss ADD. And if you want to contact me, you can do so on my website or on Facebook. I have a page which Sean has a hard time connecting with, so I'm going to have to put him on the the computer and teach them how to connect to my Facebook page. But, yeah, it would be great if all of you would go and like my Facebook page. I have some information on there, too, that I think you'll find interesting. So have a great week, and I will see you – not see you, but I will be on the air next week. Take care. And remember to please stay in the moment.